in the week we talked about George Clooney's spat with the British tabloid The Daily Mail. At the time, we put in a call to actor and writer John Cleese, who's been outspoken about his disgust with Britain's tabloid culture and the toll it takes on people, famous and ordinary. He called us back and joins me now on the line from London, where he's finishing up the last few live performance reunion shows with Monty Python. John Cleese, it's always been a challenge for us to kind of explain the tabloid culture of Britain. We have tabloids here. They're different. They don't seem to have the reach or the impact. You just kind of see them in the supermarket checkout counter, you move on. Why do they have such huge impact in Britain?
It's a very good question. I suspect it's to do with the decline of educational standards, because if you look even at what used to be a very decent newspaper, The Telegraph, then they're trying to put a large picture of a good-looking woman on the front page every day. I mean, this is extraordinary for a so-called quality newspaper. I mean, the Sun started it. You see, Rupert Murdoch took the Sun newspaper down market in a way it had never been taken down market before, because he was the only newspaper proprietor there's ever been in England who did not want to be made a peer. He did not want to be Lord Murdoch, so he didn't care about keeping his nose clean with the establishment. So he took the Sun down market, and then the other papers had to follow because it was so successful. And what happened is that the tabloid journalism then spread to the sort of middle-range papers. I mean, the Mail was not thought of as a tabloid 20 years ago, but it is now. And then that spread to papers like The Times and The Telegraph. And the whole thing is now into some form of very low-grade entertainment. There's very little good writing. There are certainly some very, very fine columnists that I read now and again. But by and large, the whole standard has dropped. But you've got to start somewhere, and I think you need to start with a paper that is so dishonest that it runs stories that it knows not to be true, provided only that its lawyers have said they can't be sued for them.
Give us an example of how the Daily Mail has treated you.
I'll give you a very simple example. My wife, Jenny, there was a story early on when Jenny and I together that suggested that she danced naked in order to keep my attention or to make sure the relationship continued. I mean, of course, we roar with laughter at it, but there are people out there who actually think there might be something in it. And the point is, Carol, which is quite funny, if it was true, and I can promise you it isn't, how would they know?
So it seems like you want the press itself, outside of the Daily Mail, to call the Daily Mail on its reporting.
Well, it's hard to get a very corrupt press to call an even more corrupt newspaper. I think it's got to come from outside the press. And one of the problems in this country is that the press is, in quotes, regulated by a thing called the Press Complaints Commission, which, believe it or not, is financed by the newspapers. And the code of conduct is one that's set up by newspaper editors. Well, what a joke, you know, judge and jury and all that.
Now, you take this issue very seriously, and it's interesting because you're better known for your silliness. Where does this come from in you?
Oh, I'm not silly all the time. I'm mainly silly for money, you know. Otherwise, I'm just an ordinary, lower middle class, fairly well-educated guy who's fairly appalled by the standards of what used to be called Fleet Street. Does that answer your question?
So I had to look at the Daily Mail, the most recent headline about you. And of course, it's about the live performances that you're finishing up in London. And the headline said, "End of the road for those silly walks. John Cleese can't perform Monty Python stunt anymore because he has a dodgy knee." How did you respond to that headline?
Well, there's no point in responding to it, but, you know, and they also were extremely insulting, particularly insulting about Carol Cleveland, you know, who's in her 70s and is in extraordinary physical condition. She's wonderfully fit. She looks very, very good indeed. The Mail critic was absolutely scathing about her appearance. And I think, is this theatrical criticism? And the answer is, yes, it is in the Daily Mail.
How would you change the system if you could?
Well, you have to bring in a system of independent regulation. The Hacked Off campaign, which I'm associated with Hugh Grant and a lot of other people, that's what we're trying to get done. But the problem is that when the BBC wants someone on from Hacked Off and we want to send along a professor of communications or a lawyer or a judge who's on our side, they say, no, we want a personality. So you get the impression that the only people who are concerned are actors or, you know, celebrities. All over Britain, people are appalled by this paper. And yet, for some reason, they continue to read it. And I think it's because they simply do not realize that it lies.
Now, I can't leave you without asking you about the live performances. You guys, I read somewhere you have a combined age of 361 and you're out there doing a live show. What persuaded you to get together and do a live show at this point?
Well, the funny thing is, whenever we get together, we laugh a lot, Carol. We always say we laugh more when we're together than any other time in our life. So we were laughing and laughing about a ridiculous legal case we'd got into. And somebody said, well, why don't we do a show, which we'd last thought of doing in 1999. And that'll pay off the legal costs and with a bit to spare. And we all sort of laughed and said, well, that might be fun. And we thought about it and thought, why not? And we talked to a friend we know, and he said, well, why don't you do it in an arena? And we said, well, that'd be interesting. God, we've never done that. And I personally love having new experiences. I wouldn't be enjoying this or having such a good time if we were in an ordinary West End theatre of 1,200, but we're in the O2 and performing to 16,000 every night. And it's not a theatrical performance. These are basically people who've loved our stuff for 40 years and are kind of coming to say goodbye. And it's, in some ways, it's really quite touching because they are thanking us for making them laugh and we're kind of thanking them for thanking us. It's a very special occasion. It's the friendliest audience I've ever played to in my life. And I think they're getting some good stuff because when the audience is that friendly, the actors relax and then little things happen that have never happened before and the audience love that.
So you kind of feel like Mick Jagger out there?
I know. I've never been to pop concerts or rock concerts. I'm the strangest man in the world in my musical taste, so I don't really know what they're like. But it's what I've noticed about rock, there's a lot of cheering. What I like is the laughter.
John Cleese is a writer, actor, and tall person. That's what it says on his website. He's also very passionate about the issue of British tabloids and the quality of journalism. John Cleese, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure because I don't see how a democracy can function if there isn't reasonably clear, honest, and accurate information out there.
We reached out to the Daily Mail for comment. The tabloid didn't get back to us in time for this broadcast, so the argument continues.
I came here for a good argument.
No, you didn't. You came here for an argument.
Well, an argument's not the same as contradiction.
Can be.
No, it can't. An argument's a collective series of statements to establish a definite proposition.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is. It isn't just contradiction.
Look, in my
The World's Theme was composed by Eric Goldberg from the Nan and Bell Harris Studios at WGBH in Boston. I'm Carol Hills. Have a great weekend.
The World is a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH, supported by the Rita Allen Foundation, investing in transformative ideas in their earliest stages to leverage their growth and promote breakthrough solutions to significant problems. RitaAllen.org, the WGBH Fund for Environmental Reporting, whose donors include the Grantham Foundation for the Protection of the Environment, supporting a cooperative approach to solving our critical environmental problems while we still can, and the Candida Fund, furthering the values that contribute to a healthy planet. The Luce Foundation's Henry R. Luce Initiative on Religion and International Affairs. The Annenberg Foundation, advancing a better tomorrow through visionary leadership today. More at annenbergfoundation.org. And by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. MacFound.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.